On chapter 3, Perek Gimel of Melachim. In the art scroll? Page
28? If it's Perek Gimel,
Gimel,
then it's 28.
Page 3. Perek Gimel. Yeah, okay. The last we learned, very interesting, the last thing we learned, Shlomo had Shimi ben Gera killed. What was Shimi ben Gera's capital offense? What did he do that was so bad that got him a death penalty?
Cursing David.
Right, he cursed David, but that wasn't what got him killed.
Yeah, got him killed was leaving town.
And we wondered, we wondered last time, why in the world would Shimi do that? And, you know, if the king told him not to do that, why would Shimi do it? And we're going to find out today why Shimi did it, or why Shimi at least felt he would be immune if he left town and that Shlomo wasn't really serious. What the ramifications were. Perek Gimel. Bayitchaten Shlomo et Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Bayikach et Bat Paro. Bayivyeha el Ir David. Ad Kaloto Dibnot et Beito ve'et Beit Hashem. Ve'et Chomat Yerushalayim Shaviv. So Shlomo married into the house of Paro, the king of Egypt. And he married, Bayikach, he wed the daughter of Paro. He brought her to the king, to the city of David, Ir David, his city, until he finished building his house and the house of God and the walls of Jerusalem surrounding. And there are a number of different challenging problems with what Shlomo did. Anybody tell me one of them?
He wasn't Jewish.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So how is
kind
it? Right. How is it that Shlomo married a non-Jewish woman?
He wants to establish an alliance.
Right. Clearly, one gets the sense that this is all about diplomacy and alliance establishing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And by the way, this is the first we've ever seen of this in the Jewish monarchies, right? That the Jewish kings are doing things that will cement their place in the world, in a sense. You know, but it raises the classic issue of, to what degree should the Jewish monarchy be an island, or, you know, like as Michael Dukakis said, a city on a hill? Everybody remember that famous speech in the 1988 Democratic Convention? Great speech. Or, on the other hand, not engaged in the world. Meaning, one could very well argue, you know, Shlomo, very good, you want to create diplomacy, you want to create alliances.
That's a poor excuse.
What?
It's a poor excuse.
Okay. So that's question number one. Question number one, she's not Jewish. So what's the solution to that problem?
Convert her.
That's not a new solution. It's an old solution. Okay. Now, it should be noted, nowadays, I will digress for a minute. Nowadays, we absolutely would never use this. We would never convert a girl for the purposes of marriage. But that is a relatively new phenomenon. Can anybody tell me why that's a new phenomenon? And the olden days? I mean, nowhere in the Shulchan Aruch does it ever say you can't convert someone for marriage, for the purpose of marriage. It doesn't say that in Shulchan Aruch. They don't talk about it even.
It probably never happened.
Right.
It probably happened so rarely.
Well, it happened rarely. And what's even more important than that is that there was no such thing, really, as a non-observant community. And there was no such thing as being Jewish but not acting Jewish. I mean, it was assumed, even if the daughter of Paro, let's say, we're going to see it's a machlokas, whether she's converted or not. Let's say she converts. Well, hopefully she converted. Let's say she converted. If she converted, it was assumed that she would take on the customs and the practices of her husband and the Jewish faith.
Because that's what being Jewish meant at that time.
Right. I mean, that's what it means to become Jewish.
Nowadays, it's a matter of convenience.
We think, I'm saying also, we think of, you know, let's say you want to, like, think about conversion not so much as a religion per se, but as a nationality. So you used to be Russian, and you came to America. So now when you came to America, Russian?
It's opposite.
What?
I used to be Jewish, now I'm Russian.
You used to be Jewish? In Russia, you used to be Jewish. Right, when you came to America, did you say, I still want to, I believe in communism, I'm going to hold up my communist belief? Did you hold on to, you know, your faithful adherence to the principles of communism? No. But I don't even know if you held on to it when you were in Russia, to be honest with you. Right? But by power. So remember, when you became Jewish, Judaism was a nationality also. For, I would say maybe first and foremost. So when you joined the nation, is it bothering you? Want to close the door? Yeah, Mary, would you mind closing the door? Okay, thank you.
It's bothering me.
Yeah, it's a little loud.
Yeah. There.
When you want to be Jewish, when you want to join the Jewish nation, conversion was just a part of the process of joining the Jewish people. You know, and think about conversion not simply as a religious decision, or not even primarily as a religious decision, but as a national decision. I'm now going to be a part of the Jewish nation. So if you want to be a part of the Jewish nation, like Ruth, what do?
You adopt their ways.
No, first and foremost.
You declare that your alliance to...
Before that, you move to their country.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You move to their country, you adapt their ways, you become one of their people. You know, and all of those things have ramifications. So if Shlomo brings the daughter of Paro, right, just like Lahavdil, remember, you know, when the Prince of England marries some girl from France, mm-hmm. right, did she remain French or is she supposed to become English?
English.
Right, she's supposed to become English. And her children certainly were English. So the same thing is true of Bat Paro. But we're going to see, the judgment, you know, of the Farshim, of the commentaries, on what Shlomo does, on how he behaves. So he marries now. Does the Navi up to this point in this passage make any judgments, make any value judgments about what Shlomo does, about the fact that he marries Bat Paro? Up until now, the answer is no. He doesn't say anything. Good, bad, it just says that he does this. Apparently, he does this at the beginning of his monarchy. Okay? Pasuk Bet. Rak ha'am mizabchim ba'bamot. Right, rak. What's rak? Bad only. The only problem is, the nation is offering sacrifices on the bamot. Bamot are private altars. The bamot, once the Beis HaMikdash was built, the bamot were absolutely prohibited. The Jewish people were not permitted to offer their own sacrifices on private altars, only on the Beis HaMikdash. But during the time before the Beis HaMikdash was killed, so there was a Mishkan here, there was a Mishkan there, it was certainly not a good idea, right? Even though they you know, it presents a sort of disunified nation. If you look at Rashi for a minute, Bizabchim Babamot, Rashi says, L'shem Shamayim, right? They weren't doing it for idolatry, they were doing it L'shem Shamayim, for the sake of heaven. Anybody who wanted to would build an altar on his roof or in his backyard. You know, hey, come on over. We're offering sacrifices to God tomorrow. What? It's like Shebels.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody, you know, made an altar in your basement or an altar in your backyard. You built on an annex to your house and you had an altar and, you know, why not? It's kind of more convenient than going down the block. Okay, I'll get it.
Or going all the way to Yerushalayim.
Oh, for sure. Well, what was Yerushalayim? What is Yerushalayim at this point? Yerushalayim is simply the seat of power. It's where David established his kingdom. But there's no Beit HaMikdash yet. There's no sanctuary. There's no anything. So they know that it's a place, but why would you go there? There's nothing there to go to. Pasuk Gimel. Vayehav Shlomo et Hashem Valechet b'chukot aviv. Right, so Shlomo loved God to follow in the statutes of his father David. Rak babamot umizabdeach umekater. Right. Unfortunately, he was still offering sacrifices on the altar. So that sounds like a little bit of a criticism, correct? Says Rashi, looks like a Rashi, and Rak babamot. Rashi says babamot umizabdeach umekater. Rashi says bignuto diber hakatut. Now here the verse is speaking negatively about Shlomo. Why? Sheshaha is a binyan habayit arba shanim. He waited to build the Beit HaMikdash for 4 years. Now, by the way, why does he wait to build the Beit for 4 years? What happens, in a sense, what's the delay for?
What happened during this 4 years?
What?
What was the delay?
By the way, how old is he when he takes over? How old did we say?
13,
14, or 13 or 14?
Just before
Bar Mitzvah. 12 or 13, right. So now he's all of... 16.
Just got married.
So what happened? Why would he wait 4 years? What would be the fourth year that he would wait after 4 years? So what happened in the first 3 years?
He was cleaning up.
He was cleaning up house. Right. Mm-hmm. Remember, when was Shimi killed? How long after
right.
So much? 3 years. No, 3 years. Right. The verse says, one second. Only 3 years later, right? 3 years later. So one gets the sense that he waits those 3 years, he doesn't feel able to build on his own monarchy until he finishes his father's old business. That he's, you know, waiting for Shimei to slip up in a sense.
Would be appropriate while he was still killing.
Right, could be.
And then he's making an alliance with Paro.
After that.
So now that those things are taken care of, now it's time to build the Mikdash.
We're going to see what Rashi says. Let's look at the. Wait, I'm going to show you some Midrashi.
Isn't the pasuk though contradicting itself?
Why?
Because it says he follows David. He loves Hashem.
Except
yet he's not. He doesn't.
Right, but what should he be doing? So what should he be doing? What's he doing wrong? So the Rashi says what he's doing wrong is that he didn't build the Beis Hamikdash right away. That he was supposed to have built the Beis Hamikdash right away.
And that would have stopped this?
Stopped what?
All the people making...
Sure, where are they supposed to offer their sacrifices to God?
Is that what
they're
doing?
Where are they supposed to? There's no place for them to offer their sacrifices.
But they never had a Beis Hamikdash, though. Right? I mean, it was never something.
Correct. So that's exactly right.
Really?
Right, but yes. I mean, how else would you worship God?
What Mishkan?
But when there was a Mishkan, but the Mishkan when Shiva was destroyed, and it was in Nov Yerachol, I mean, there wasn't a Mishkan established after the Mishkan of Nov was destroyed. So that's already from Shaul's time. So all of David's life, he's offering on his own private altar. That was worship. Remember, they didn't go to shul. There was no shul. Right? Their worship, their offering, their service to God was a sacrificial service.
Well, up until the end of King David's rule.
Up until the end of King David's rule. Well, until the end of King David's rule. No.
Because he bought Har Moriah.
He bought the mountain.
Right.
He didn't build the Beis Hamikdash.
He offered sacrifices there, though.
Right. No, so even he did it, though. Who says that that's going to be the place? So God chose that place. We know.
Every time this was going on, too.
Sure. So, but why you're asking? Then you're asking me, why are we criticizing Shlomo?
Right.
Why?
Why did we kill him?
Because he should have been made.
Should have done it right away. First job, job 1A. Build Beit HaMikdash. Okay. Right. But he didn't.
Is that what the Navi told him to do?
Navi didn't tell him to do anything.
So then, how would he know?
How would he know to build Beit HaMikdash?
Because David said that's sort of.
I'm pretty sure that his father told him that it was his job to build a Beit
HaMikdash.
Right. Actually, we don't see it in the.
Say, he told him, on beginning June 15th, you have to start building. He just said you have to build it.
Right. Let's look at some of the Rashi's now about this whole Bas Paro thing, because it's very interesting. If you think about it, I'm going to read on. That's going to be on the Psukim, and then I'm going to take you back to the marriage to the daughter of Paro, because you'll see. Then let's read on a second. Vayelach HaMelech Givona. The king went to Givon, Lizboach Sham, to sacrifice there. Kihi Abama Gedola. That was the big altar, right? That was where everybody did all their big sacrifices. Elef Olot Yaleh Shlomo Al Mizbeach Ahu. Shlomo would offer Elef Olot, meaning Elef Olot, the Mefarshim some say, he would offer 1,000 sacrifices on one day.
Wow. That's a lot.
1,000 sacrifices. That's a lot. Olot. And by the way, what happens to an Ola, Korban Ola? Korban Ola is totally burnt. Nobody eats anything. So
1,000
grown animals?
Right, he's offering 1,000 sacrifices. Mm-hmm. Pasuk A.
Wow.
So that sounds good or bad, by the way? Good, very nice. B'givon yirash emos shlomo b'chalom halayla v'yomer elokim she'al na'atein lach. And then Givon, God appears to Shlomo and says in the middle of the night, what should he give you? So if God appears to Shlomo, how are things going?
Very well.
Very well. Shlomo's good. He's worshiping God. He's following in his father's footsteps. All right, he didn't build a Beis HaMikdash. This Gifmelech is going to get to it, right? Not the end of the world. Everything is going well. So then you have to ask yourself, in the flow of this chapter up until this point that we've learned, one thing doesn't belong. What doesn't belong in the flow of the chapter?
The marriage.
The marriage. What in the world is a marriage to the daughter of Paro doing in the context of things are going great, and Shlomo's doing fine, and he's worshiping God, he's following his father's footsteps. Oh, and by the way,
he got married.
To an Egyptian woman, right, the daughter of the king of Egypt. Oh, and everything's good.
It says also that he's very powerful.
It says that he's trying to become be powerful. So you think that's a commentary on how well things are going? Interesting. Okay.
Not anyone gets to marry the daughter of Pharaoh.
That's true.
Maybe also just being married gives him...
Again, though, the psukim are coming at Shlomo from a spiritual perspective. Right? What are the things that the pasuk lists? Okay? From pasuk bet, the nation offering sacrifices, Shlomo following in the laws of his father David, he's offering sacrifices, he went to Givon to offer 1,000 sacrifices in a day. Right? Those are all spiritual values. So to say that the Paro daughter thing is there to show how well things are going is also taken out of context. Is that, has nothing to do with his spirituality. Unless she was one of these, you know, Baalas Chuvas that, you know, she, you know, he marries her and she turns out firmer than he is, and, you know.
And she says, go, no, it's time to
go learn, right? There shouldn't be a minion.
You think you're going to do 500, make 1,000?
Right, okay. So let's look at the Midrashim. No, the Midrashim are what? So I don't think so. The Midrashim are the basis for Rashi. So you see on your sheet, page 1. It says, Vayitchaten Shlomo et Paro. Right, doesn't say it's interesting language, right? Doesn't say he married the daughter of Paro.
No.
It says he married
Paro.
Amar Rabbi Chia Bar Ami Mishmei de Ula. Rabbi Chia said the name of Ula. La'olam yadur adam b'makom rabo. A person should always live where his Rebbe lives. Why? Shekolzman Shishimi ben Gera kayam lo nasa Shlomo et bat Paro. As long as Shimi ben Gera was alive, Shlomo, I'll add in, did not have the gall to marry the daughter of Paro. But, okay, why? Because right after Shimi's death, what do we learn about? Marriage to Bat Paro. Right, okay. So what do we see from this? Okay, we see from this that who was Shimi ben Gera? He was his Rebbe. He wasn't just Stam Sam Shmendrik.
Wow.
Like, he was his Rebbe. Meaning, Shimi ben Gera, when he went on Chris David, Shimi ben Gera was a leader. He was respected. And so the Medavid forgave him, and he told Shlomo, don't let him survive. You know, what he was really telling him, you know that guy that educated you, that raised you, that taught you, who's your Rebbe? You have to take care of him.
Well.
Which could very well be why
that chance.
Yeah, why he's going to say why Shimi thought he could get away with it. You know, I raised him on my knee, I taught him Chumash, I taught him Aleph Beis, I taught him his first Mishnah. Right, you know, I was at his upshurid. He's never going to do it. He's a 15-year-old kid. He'll never, come on, I'm going to get my slaves. And so he had him killed. And he did the right thing, but what are the ramifications? Shimi's presence was a stabilizing presence for Shlomo. You know, even if you're the king of Israel, right, it doesn't matter. If you have a respect for someone, you have a deference for someone, then there are certain things you're not going to do because you care about what that person thinks of you. Mm-hmm. Even if you end up killing him. That's what he did. He put a price on his head. He said, no, don't leave. But I still respect you. And he still cared about what he thought, even though he had to end up killing him. And when he did, says the Gemara, that's when things started to go awry. Because that's a problem. And so I think there is what to be said, you know, and for all of us in the Gemara, the lesson of the Gemara is, you know, who's your mental or spiritual buffer, mentor? Who's going to see you and say to you, hey, I haven't seen you in a while, what's going on with you? You know, everybody needs to have that. And someone had it until they killed him.
Wow.
So strange, isn't it? Next midrash. Vayitchaten Shlomo et Paro. Listen how the midrash reads this. And there's a few midrashim I'm sharing with you.
Say Paro's daughter.
What do you think? I have an answer for this one. Why do you think?
Yeah. I honestly have an answer.
What do you think? Why does it say he married Paro?
Because it
so was... So he gave it to him as
well. Right. So you could take it in a literal sense and say that he did it as an alliance. But I could take it more in a spiritual sense and say that the Navi is making a commentary about the ramifications of marrying the daughter of Paro. When you marry, you know what they say, when you marry a girl, you marry the whole family. Right? So what happens when the father-in-law comes over to visit? When the king of Egypt shows up for dinner? Does he come and does he come with his yarmulke on? You know, and is he...
He has to have respect. He might put on a yarmulke.
Maybe he will, but he's not a member of the family with all that that implies. Right? What is the Torah's perspective on doing such a thing? Right? Is that something that Judaism wants the king of Israel to do? I'm reading in the New York Times there's an article about the Annapolis Agreement and the whole thing falling apart. So in Israel, there's a new verb they talk about in government regions. You know, like there's a, to make something a verb is like lichtov means to write, like lisgar means to close. They have a verb in government, the Israeli government, called lekandel. Lekandel to mean to travel back and forth from one country to another without really doing very much. The candel from
candle
is rice. The candel.
Shuttle.
What's he doing? Can you candel? Do you know what I'm saying? It's a pretty funny commentary. New York Times. He actually quoted the New York Times article. Only someone who knew Hebrew would understand the richness of how funny that is. You know, but is that something we want? Do we want, you know, deep relationships, you know? Do we want the Prime Minister of Israel to marry Condoleezza Rice or to marry the daughter of Mahmoud Abbas, you know, God forbid? Why? Because that will solidify our relationship with the Palestinian people. You know, maybe you want to have peace. Maybe you want to have prosperity. But you
don't want to solidify
that way. Correct. Right, that's a cost. There's danger. In fact, look at the next midrash of Ayitchatin Shlomo at Paro. Unbelievable midrash. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. This is Rabbi Yehuda says the name of Shmuel. B'sha'a shenasa Shlomo et bat Paro. The moment Shlomo married the daughter of Paro, this is the second midrash, number one. Yarad Gavriel v'na'ach kana bayam. Gavriel went down into the depths of the sea and he placed a kana, a reed, at the bottom of the sea. The alav and the reed grew over time. The alav nivne krach gadol, and on that reed grew into the sea, and then an island sprouted it up, and based on that reed grew gad krach gadol shel Romi, the nation of Rome.
Which of course would destroy.
Correct. Meaning, what the midrash is saying is, the moment Shlomo married the daughter of Paro was the beginning of the destruction of the Jewish people. There's no harsher midrash than that. That's an incredibly sharp, harsh commentary of the midrash.
And it's amazing because the Beit HaMikdash hasn't even been built yet, and they're already
destroying it. Right. Right. Let's read on. There's a couple,
so
two more.
To assume she did not convert.
Next midrash. The source number two. Vayitchaten Shlomo et Paro. Imagine Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef asked, Vayitchaten Shlomo et Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Hey, how could he do it? How could he marry a non-Jew? Who Mishani, the Gemara answer is, Diure Gaira. Oh, no problem. She converted. She was a Giyaris. U Parich. The Gemara then asks, V'halo kivlu gerim, lo b'yamei David, v'lo b'yamei Shlomo. They made a rule. No convert in the time of David or the time of Shlomo. Anybody know that? Want to know why?
Yeah, why?
Why? It's the same reason. Remember the article in the wherever it was?
Yeah.
That Chaim Ramon said, I don't want any new lost tribes.
Oh.
Right? Why don't the lost tribes all go to their local priest, right? Go to the Reformed rabbi, you know, and convert en masse. And all these 100,000 converts or a million converts from the Congo will then travel to Tel Aviv, travel to Ben Gurion Airport and say, all of a church.
Right. So now that the blueprint is down for building of the temple and for the glory of the Jewish people.
Right.
Why
do people, this idea of people wanting to become Jews, the idea of conversion, of voluntary conversion, it was so unheard of, really, throughout Jewish history. That, you know, and you want a person has to convert for the desire to be a member of the Jewish people. You can do it. But most of Jewish history, who would ever want to be a Jew? Right? And the problem was, when things were really, really good, you didn't want anybody who wanted to convert because they didn't want to convert for the religion. They wanted to convert because life is bad in Congo and it's really good in Israel, comparatively. Now you have that problem. It's a very serious problem. How do you, you know, who's to say that you're not going to find 7 million Indians who think that they're the lost tribe of Zebulun? Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very serious challenge. You know, and a small state like Israel can't really handle that. I mean, it's, you know, especially if they're not interested in becoming Jewish per se, they're interested in what the Jewish state has to offer. We see now with the whole Russian population that they're struggling with this very issue.
Right.
Right? Do they, should they convert them? Should they not? Many people say we should just convert them. But the rabbinate says we can't convert them. They don't want to be Jewish. So it really goes to the heart of what is conversion all about? Is it making people into Israelis? Or is it making people into Jews? And in the ideal sense, what is it?
Both.
It's got to be both. So in the times of David and Shlomo, when the Jewish people were gaining in strength, they said, doors are closed to immigration. They closed up immigration. No more converts. Okay? Because, obviously, people would be coming for the prosperity and they would not be coming to be members of the Jewish people. And when people join for the prosperity or for ulterior motives, not for the right reasons, and they become part of the Jewish people, and then what happens? But what happens? They're in. When you welcome people inside and they're not committed,
they disrupt things.
Yes, they're destructive. Not intentionally, but they come with their, you know, anybody who, you have a group of people, we have a shiur, we have a group, we have a community, we have a shul, right? You bring in people from the outside, so if you bring in one person from the outside, you are able to assimilate that person into the group, and they clearly want to have the values that this group represents. When you bring in, let's say we have a shul of 210 members, let's say you brought in 50 at a time, 50 people from the I don't know, the church down the block. Well, the Baptist church on 9 Mile Road came to me and said, Rabbi, we want to convert. And we really do. And they're genuine. They want to convert. Right? If you bring in 50, you know, Baptists who I want to convert, conversion prospects into the shul, that affects their shul. They come in with their own attitudes and their own baggage and their own whatever. And that's a serious, serious problem that has to be reckoned with. It's not happening, don't worry. I don't know if you know. They haven't approached me yet. You should know, in Texas...
That's
what
you're running away.
What? In Texas... in Texas, in Jose's show, they had that. There was a church where the minister of the church said, went to the rabbi and said, I don't want to be a minister of the church anymore, I want to be Jewish. So like a whole group of them converted it, but it became a contentious issue in the shul.
Wow.
Probably for, you know, other reasons as well, as you might imagine, but it happens. So, and just remember, what does it say in Megillat Esther? After the Jewish people are saved, and Esther is in charge, and Mordechai is in charge, it says, V'rabim me'amei ha'aretz, you remember? Mityahadim. Many of the, you know, people were, well, what do you know? I found God.
I always wondered about that every time I read that.
Yeah.
Really? You want to read Jewish? Not so lucky.
Yeah, they, you know, so.
Okay, if I was Jewish, I had a difficult enough time going from Reform to Orthodox.
Sure.
I can't imagine people who are not starting out at least Jewish.
Now, I mean, there are people that want to, I think, that move to Israel, non-Jews who move to Israel and want to convert because they want to be part of Israel. You know, that's okay. They move to Israel, they want to become, you know what I'm saying? But it has to be both. Okay.
Weren't there other examples, though, where other nations did adopt Judaism?
Yeah, the Khazari, the Khazars, their whole nation, why not? I wonder what they had, what happened in the shuls, you know, in the nation of the Khazars. There's not really, I mean, is there any independent historical records, you know, of the Khazari, of the nation of the Khazars?
Never heard of it.
Never heard of it? No, you never heard of the Khuzari? Very famous book. Written by Rabbi Yehuda Levi. Very famous book. It's a sort of record of the discussions between the king of the Khazars and the rabbi. When he decided, the story goes that the king of the Khazars had a dream. He was trying to find God, and he had his recurring dream. The dream says, your intentions are good, but your practice is not good. Then you have the right idea, but you're just not doing it properly. And so he interviewed the priests, and he interviewed the Muslims, and finally he came to the rabbi, and the book of the Khuzari is a very, very long book about the discussion between him and the rabbi about Judaism. And then he decides in the end he converts, and he converts his whole country. Right. You ever heard of this? You didn't know? Is that what you're referring to? Yeah. But that's not in Israel. That's already after the exile. So there's no ulterior motive. Why would you want to become Jewish? You know? Okay.
We were doing second.
Gir Agaru, in the middle of number two. The Gemara says they didn't expect the Halo Kiblu Gerim, second line number two. But Halo Kiblu Gerim, you made Davi, Vilam, you made Shlomo. They didn't accept Gerim. The Gemara answers, Nini Hu Taimer, Elo Lashulchan Malachim. Then why did they not accept Gerim? Because people wanted to become wealthy. They wanted to join the Jewish people. Basparo, Elo Tzmichale. But Basparo, the other Paro, she didn't need the money. So she converted. Okay? So, and then the Gemara goes through the whole thing. So some say, actually, at the end of the Gemara, okay, it says, it says, and look at the second line from the bottom, El Akasha Vayitchatein. So the Gemara says, well, maybe he didn't really marry her. So because it's not only are you not allowed to marry, you're not allowed to convert someone, it, also an Egyptian is not allowed to marry to the Jewish people. The first three generations can convert. But a Jew is not allowed to marry an Egyptian. So what in the world does Shlomo do it? It's for an alliance, but what's he doing? That's a violation of the Torah. So the Gemara says, Mitoch ahava yiteira she'ahava ma'ale alav hakatuv ki'ilu nitchatein ba. Okay, it's as if he married her. I mean, if Shlomo really fell in love with this girl, and he never married her, officially, I guess. I don't know what he did.
Common law.
Concubine.
His daughter
Farah
would not put up with just being.
I don't know. So the Gemara says that he couldn't. Maybe he didn't marry her in the end. Because either way, you have a halachic problem.
He's such a good guy. He wouldn't marry somebody who wasn't Jewish.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go back. So now let's go back to the beginning, and we'll look at Rashi again. By Yitchakein Shlomo. Okay. Now you'll understand the Rashi's. Rashi says, Shlomo got married. As long as his Rebbe Shimi was alive, he didn't marry this girl. Because from this we learned, a person should live where his Rav lives. Right, that's the Midrash that we learned. Okay, let's skip to the next Rashi. One second. Vayehab Shlomo lalecha b'chukot David. Shlomo followed in the way of the father David. Rashi says, not exactly. You see, I don't know where you are on the line. I have a different navi.
3, 4, 5, 6 lines.
Okay, 6 lines down. Pasuk Gimel. Rashi says, Arba shanim ad shelo hitchil livnot. Yeah, sure, he was good. And when was he good? For the first 4 years.
Page 30.
Yeah, for the first 4 years. Aval, but you got it. You find it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It says Rashi, Aval, but Kishihitchil Livnot, when he started building the Beis HaMikdash, Vayitchaten at Bat Shlo Bat Paro, and then he also married Bat Paro in the fourth year, Yimshad Omer, you could say, Ki Al Api V'Al Chamati Haitali Ha'ir Hazot. God said, in the name of the prophet Yirmiyahu, this city existed despite my anger and my wrath. L'min Hayom Asher Banu Oto. From the moment they began building this city, God says, I hated it. That's what Yirmiyahu says. So Yirmiyahu, come on. I mean, wasn't there like any period of time where God wasn't mad at us? You know what Yirmiyahu said? I wish it wasn't so funny. You know what Yirmiyahu says? No. Why? Well, when they built the Beis HaMikdash. Yes. Shlomo built the Beis HaMikdash. Do you know what else he did the year he built the Beis HaMikdash?
He got married.
He married the daughter of Paro. He married a non-Jew. It was never a time that God wasn't angry at the Jews in Yerushalayim. So, you know, it seems, so Rashi's reading these psukim, and like, remember we read at the beginning, so rosy, someone's doing so well, he's so happy. Rashi says, it started off good, you got 4 years of good, and after that, boom.
Yeah, but it also said that God appeared to Shlomo.
In the first 4 years.
Oh, that's good.
Only during the first 4 years.
Wasn't it right after
it's been there? Sorry. Okay, Rashi, right? 1 second. So let's look at Rashi. Rashi says, is there Rashi on that? Begivon, Yirah Hashem, Pasakei, is there Rashi?
No, it says in Gibon. Wait a second, here. Begivon, Yirah Hashem, El Shlomo, Shalom.
Right, that God appeared to him.
So
but meaning, but what Rashi says is, this happened during the first 4 years.
But, okay.
When Shlomo went to Gibon during the first 4 years, that he was worshiping God properly,
so that it
that's when
off,
God was happy with him.
It starts off by saying that Shlomo married Bat Paro,
right.
But then
Rashi says the whole thing is not in order.
Oh, then it goes back to when he was sacrificing.
Right.
So he didn't sacrifice when he was married.
What?
So he didn't do the sacrifice.
Rashi says, "Kachan yibaseder oram lamadnu sheina parshio ketubo kaseder." It's not written in order.
Okay.
So first it tells you the bad, and then it tells you
all the good stuff.
But just understand that when the good stuff happened, it happened before. It's tainted. It's all gone.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty harsh. Okay, well, let's learn some of the good stuff first.
Okay.
Pasuk Vav. So God asked Shlomo. We're going to go to Pasuk Vav. God asked Shlomo.
32.
Thank you. Pasuk Vav. Shlomo. God says, what should I give you? What do you want? You know, isn't that our dream always? Like, I just want God to come to me.
Just tell me what you want.
What would you like? So what would you ask for?
What would I ask for? Tell me what you want from me.
Is that what you want? Okay. Don't tell us what you think we want you to ask for. What do you want? You know, not what you're supposed to. What do you really want?
Take my mortgage away from me.
Ah, okay. That's a good answer. Okay. Shlomo says, you did great chesed, right? When he walked before you with kindness and tzedakah, and with the straightness of the heart of your nation, and you guarded for him, you safeguarded this great kindness. And you gave him a son sitting on this kisei, on this chair, at this
time.
He's talking about himself. Va'ata Hashem Elokai. Now he's talking first person. Atahim lachet abdecha tachet David avi. You anointed your servant. By the way, this is respectful. You don't say me to someone. You say, you know, the student. Okay. I'm a little kid. I'm a young boy. I don't know how to. I don't know where I'm going or coming. But Abdecha b'toch amecha asher b'charta am rav, and you're a servant who is in the midst of a nation that you chose, a great nation. Asher lo yimaneh v'lo yisaper mirov. Right? It's not countable. It's too much. Not too much. It's not countable. Okay. V'natata la'avdecha. You should give me a hearing heart to judge your nation, to understand the difference between good and bad. Who can judge them? You know, what if you listen to Shlomo's words, what does it sound like, please? How does it sound?
Little
wine. Really?
No, very sincere, but you're humble.
Oh, I interesting. You say whining, you say humble. He sounds to me a little overwhelmed.
Well, for sure.
For sure, but you give me the strength to know between good. Give me the seichel to know between good and evil. That God marries Pharaoh's daughter.
He didn't say that. He did not say little good and evil.
But between tov v'ra.
You spoke at amecha. By the way, what is a shofet? A shofet is not just judge. What was the job of the shofet? What was the job of the Shofet, the Shvot? The Shoftim, what was the book of Shoftim? They didn't just judge.
To make laws.
To guide them, to lead them, to set, you know, you go to the bookstore, you go to the library and look for books on leadership. How many books are there?
Yeah.
Hundreds and hundreds of books on leadership. Right? If you want to become a leader, how many books should you read?
None.
Right. It has nothing to do with it has nothing to do with reading books. Maybe books can guide you in specific situations, but leadership is all about, how do you say this in a nice way, taking control and guiding in a sense.
So he's asking,
you know, say, as opposed to following.
That's what being a teacher.
Yes, I agree.
I once was sharing a room with a teacher, and he was having a problem with them, and I was sitting at the desk. I stood up, and all the kids sat down.
Right.
He turned to me and said, how did you do that?
Right.
And I said, I don't know. I just know how to do it.
Right. I think that's something that young teachers, they don't. You have to teach them that, and you have to walk in with a sense of I'm in charge. Right. Because if the student says that you're not in charge, or that you don't know if you're in charge.
You've learned that.
Right, they smell it.
So how do you explain Levin ben Tov Lera?
Also, why does it say Narakatan Sev Narakatir?
What?
Why does it say Narakatan Sev?
No, I think that's what he means. That's what he means. Right, okay. So, I think he's saying, Lavin ben Tov Lera, not just what's good and what's bad, but Lavin to understand what's right and what's wrong for the country, good and bad in general, in the broader sense. Not just personally.
Okay.
And I mean, because he's talking about This is a huge nation. I mean, you can understand, by the way. Don't give me a break. Let's say this happened when he was 12. Or it happened the first 4 years, right? So he's 14. Can you imagine what's going on in the country during those first few years? Now, we don't know. I don't tell you all the details. But is it fair to surmise that Shlomo kind of made a few mistakes? That he might have made a couple of misjudgments, and, you know, he made a couple of pronouncements. He sits down on the throne the first day, and he says, you know, somebody bring me an apple juice, and, like, they all snicker. You know what I mean? It's like, and he's trying to be a king, but he's not a king. So, and you could just see, like, you could imagine. Can you imagine the newspapers if, you know, the by some fluke, the vice president was a 16-year-old kid or an 18-year-old? They're talking about there's some major city that elected like a 21-year-old mayor or an 18-year-old mayor. And, you know, he played a prank. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He played a prank on one of his friends. And, like, you're the mayor now. You can't do that, you know. So you can, I don't think Shlomo did that, but how intimidating must it be to be the person in control and be 12 or 13 or 14?
And
even if that's an adult, it's just
have
so
then
why was he appointed king to begin with?
Certainly
somebody knew, you know, you don't put a 10-year-old or whatever he was.
Here's the trick. He's supposed to be the king. God chose him as the king. He promised he'd be the king. In David's eyes, it's his hope that when he's 35, when David Mama lives to the ripe old age of 90. Mm-hmm. But it didn't work out that way. Right? You know, that's not, you don't get to choose. You get to choose, if you're lucky, you get to choose a successor. But you never get to choose when he succeeds you.
That's
not the rule. Okay. God liked that. Because what couldn't you guess? So are you looking? Elav Yan, because Asher Shalta et Hadavar Hazeh, Velo Shalta Lecha Yamim Rabim, you didn't ask for a long life, Velo Shalta Lecha Osher, money, Velo Shalta Nefesh Oivecha, victory, V'Shalta Lecha Lehavim Lishmua Mishpat, you learned to be able to understand, to guide. Hine Ashiti Kidvarecha, Hine Natati Lecha Lev Chacham Ben Avon. You got it. I'll give you a knowing heart. Asher kamocha lo haya lefanecha ve'acharecha lo yakum kamocha. You want, you know. Now, by the way, did God make him? It's unclear. It doesn't seem that God made him smarter, but he didn't make it give him a higher IQ.
You don't have to be smart to be wise.
Right. Wisdom is a little bit different, but I'm going to see that he gained certain skills. We'll see. V'gam asher lo sha'alta natati lecha gam osher gam kavod asher lo haya kamocha ish b'malachim kol yemecha. And the things you didn't ask for.
Yeah.
You'll get. Why are you going to get them?
Because you didn't ask.
Because you didn't ask them. Right, that's the trick. I think sometimes, I think in my own davening, that we have needs or we have wants. And in reality, we daven for them. But in reality, God doesn't want us to daven for the things that we want. He wants us to daven for the things that we need. And if we learn to daven for the things that we need, then maybe He'll give us the things that we want.
Need Jewish words for myself.
Yeah.
I want that also. So sometimes, why?
Do you understand what I'm saying? No, you need understanding of your sons. You need patience and the ability to deal with challenging situations. That's what you need.
And you set them up with Jewish
girls. That's true too. You know. Yeah, okay. But you want. You understand? Yours are good. Yours are really good. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? But most of us, the things that we want, the things that our needs and our wants are very different. Are very different. And the things that we ask for sometimes are not what we need, but what we want. When in reality, maybe if we ask for what we need, and Shlomo's quite, I mean, the reason why Shlomo's prayer works is because he's sincere. And he really does want wisdom. He wants to understand it. He wants to be able to do the right thing. And God responds to that. When you want the right thing for the right reason, and God really does respond. Okay? V'im yudalad v'im telech b'drachah b'shmor chukai mitzvotai kasher halach David abde avicha harach yetem echayim. If you want long life, no problem. What you got to do? Follow your father's ways. Follow the ways of the Torah. Guaranteed. Tetva v'yikach Shlomo v'lech halom. Shlomo wakes up. V'yavo Yerushalayim. Comes Yerushalayim. V'yamo b'fnei Aron b'rit Hashem. He stands before the Ark of God. Vayal olot, vayash lamim, vayash mishtel l'chalav adav. Makes a huge party. Now, by the way, how does Shlomo know that his dream is fulfilled? Get this, it's going to blow your mind. And there's a very famous thing about Shlomo as well. Rashi, Tekva, Vayikach Shlomo, Vehine Chalom. He wakes up and there's a dream. What page are you on?
34.
Rashi on 30, on 15, Vayikach Shlomo. How many lines down? 67 lines down in Rashi. Vehine Hevim, he understood, Shechalomo Emet. He knew his dream came true. Why? Shomer Of Mitzavtseif. He heard the bird chirping, Umevim Meshono. And he understood what it was saying.
Wow.
Kelev Noveach, dog barking, Umevim Meshono. If I could talk to the animals, right? Right. Shlomo, the Midrash says that Shlomo could talk to the animals. He was able to understand the language of the animals. And so he wakes up. Can you imagine you wake up the next morning and like all the things that you it's almost like, you know, the veil of secrecy in the world is taken off. Because all the things that we just sort of tune out, now all of a sudden
makes sense.
You can hear what's going on. You know, that's part of the power, I think, to talk to the animals. You know, hey bird, come here, go there, tell me what, you know, what's going on. Yeah, I know. There are wonderful, marvelous midrashim about Shlomo and talking to the animals. Beautiful, beautiful midrashim. So, by the way, and the Gemara makes a conclusion from this that this is how, you know, one of the sources, you know, that you should make a siyum. When you finish something, when you learn something, you should make a siyum. Why? Because if Shlomo, right? Because Shlomo, when he learned, you know, when he learned this great wisdom, what does he do? He goes back to Yerushalayim. By Yafish Tegadol, makes a big party. So if you finish a course of study, make a party. Even if you do it all in one day on their pizza.
And go to Yerushalayim.
And go to Yerushalayim.
Is that where the idea of a siyum comes from?
Yeah, that's where the idea of a siyum comes from.
Why is there a yod in David?
I don't know. Again, the good questions you ask. Don't know.
I never get any answers.
You're going to have to learn yourself. You're going to have to figure out the grammar. I'm not a grammarian. I'm not such a... Ash! Pasuk Tzayin. As Tavona Shtayim Nashim. Yeah, this is a very famous story that you're all familiar with. Zonot El Hamelech Vata'amodla Lefana. And these two harlot women came before the king and they stood before him. Vata'amor Ha'isha Ha'achat Biadoni. Ani Ba'isha Ha'azot Yoshivot B'vayt Achad Ve'eleidi Ma'v'vayt. So we were both pregnant, right? We were both in the pregnancy ward. We both had babies. Right? The same time. They must have delivered each other's babies.
Well, not necessarily. You could have a baby delivered and then the wife goes home.
Right. I'm saying, but they were alone in the house.
People knew they were alone in the house.
Now he may also the tea. On the third night that I gave birth, she gave birth. So we at the afterwards were alone. Zulati shtayim anachnu b'bayit. It was only us. Yudke. Vayama ben ha'isha hazot halayla asher shachva alav. By the way, this is very common.
It is.
It's common even today.
Yeah.
They always say never keep your baby in bed with you for that exact reason. Did you get that a lot?
Right. Most of the cases of crib death that are investigated are
turns out
result of adults sleeping.
Do people come in with their babies every now and then?
Yeah, occasionally.
Yeah. It happens. They say never, never, never do it, and people just they're tired or whatever. It's a terrible mistake. Vatakam b'toch ha'layla, stop in the middle of the night. Vatikach et b'ni me'etzli, she stole my baby. Va'amatcha yishena, I was sleeping. Vatiskiveh b'cheka, v'et b'na ha'min, kiskiveh b'cheki. She took her baby, put it with me. My baby stayed with her. Va'akum b'boker la'hinit et b'ni me'hinek. I woke up in the morning to nurse my child, and he's dead. That bonene la baboker v'hine lo haya b'ni asher yaladati. Now it's a great conundrum. Nowadays, what would they do?
DNA.
Right, take a DNA test and you're done. Okay. If only it was so simple. Right? Matomer ha'isha acheret lo ki b'ni ha'chayu b'nei chamei. No, she's lying. You can see them screaming in the courtroom. I gave you a little picture on your sheet. If you're, you know, this is one of the more famous. Scenes. Did it come out in the photocopy?
No.
Not at all? Oh, I think you can share it if you want. One of the more famous scenes
in the
movie.
Yeah.
There's a movie? Really? One of the more famous scenes in Tanakh that's been depicted in many, many different ways in the art world. Okay? So she says, it's my baby, it's not your baby. You can see the, you know, yeah. They already shut his throats. Vayomer HaMelech, Kichu li Cherev. I got a solution. Give me a sword. Vayaviu Cherev li HaMelech. Vayomer HaMelech, Gizru et HaYelet HaChai Nishnaim. Utinu Rachesi L'Achad. Rachesi L'Achesi L'Achad. Right, this is the obvious solution is cut them in half. You get half, then you get half. Okay. Vatomar Isha Asher Bina Hachai El HaMelech. So the woman said, the woman who had compassion said, give it to her. Just don't kill the baby. Goes well. Okay? And the other one said, sounds like a good idea to me. Unbelievable, isn't it?
I got chills.
What?
Mm-hmm.
How could a woman? How could a woman say? Why did she obviously steal the baby?
She stole the baby.
So what?
It hurts when they're.
She was jealous. Meaning, the only way she could say, "I'm happier with the baby dead than alive," is if I can't have my baby. I don't want anyone to have the baby.
Right.
You know, and Shlomo and his wisdom and his unbelievable wisdom. Understood that keen insight. Because it would make sense. A normal person would think, both of them would say, don't kill the child. Like any normal person, a normal person would say, don't kill the child. But only a woman so jealous and so upset that she'd be desperate enough to steal a child. It's not about the child, it's about her, what she needs. And what she needs is not to be jealous. So, if it takes killing the child, now she would have been equally happy, you know, the child had not survived. So she says, "V'yana melech ha'yomer tznu la atayalut ha'chai v'hamei lo t'mitu." He even knows. He says that, and we all know the story. Okay, give her the baby. It's her baby. So the question is, how did the Rabbanim want to know? There's two issues really. Was Shlomo serious or not? What would have happened if nobody had said anything?
The child was innocent.
I don't think the king would be kidding.
What? Right.
She would have to know that he was serious, otherwise she wouldn't.
That's the picture, right? Take it, do it. You know what I'm saying? So if you look at the picture, it's an unbelievable picture.
Why are
they asking for it? Shlomo, no, the Zonot. It could be an innkeeper. The Zonot means prostitute.
Yeah, I know, but why
that? Why are the innkeepers prostitutes?
Yeah.
I don't have to answer that one for you, do I?
They show an older...
You're right. It's inaccurate because he's clearly much not that old.
Because what 17-year-old would think of doing that?
That would be so barbaric as to do it. But we're going to the Midrash, so we have two Midrashim here. Mm-hmm. One Midrash says, I need a sheet. It's a machloket, really. Right, it's a machloket. If you look down on the source number 4, it's Chilu Piv Shel Shlomo Novia B'Chachma. Okay? Shlomo, you know, his mouth began to pour forth wisdom. He said, God decreed that this judgment would one day come before me. Why? That's why man has two of everything. He's got two eyes, he's got two nostrils, got two ears. Why do you need two? So I can cut the baby in half and each one will have one. Seems reasonable, right? He said, that's why he said, cut it in half. Amar, about the beginning of the line, about 6 lines down, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Barari Barabi Eli. See that? Amar Rabbi Yehuda? Inu hayiki sham, if I was there, pukrin hayiki notin al tzavarosh of Shlomo, he said, I would have taken a noose or a necktie or something and choked that guy. Lo da'i she'echad meit, ala od echad l'sheni hayagazer. It's bad enough, one child is dead. He would have killed the other one. Meaning, Rav Shimon Bar Elai says clearly, if one of the women would not have stood up, he would have done it.
Wow.
Yes. Which is almost shocking. You know, what?
Almost.
Yeah, as you say. So listen to the next. Look at the next one. Says number 5. Okay. I'm Rabbi Lazar. Yishlosu makom hofi aruach hakodesh. In three places we see Ruach HaKodesh. Beit Dino Shel Shem, Beit Dino Shel Shmuel, or Beit Dino Shel Shlomo. Right? Shem, Shmuel, and Shlomo. Beit Dino Shel Shlomo, Yechshiva says, Vayan HaMelech, Vayomer Tnu La Atayelo Rachai, Vameilo Tmitu, Hi Imo. That one's the mother. So Gemara says, Bina Yada. How did he know? Maybe the other ones knew, well, if I act compassionate, then I'll get the baby. Maybe she's lying. Yachad bat kol v'amra hi imo. So he says, what happened was a voice called out from heaven and said, the one on the left. Amarava mimai. How do you know? Dilma birachem kamarachma. I didn't know. Maybe it was just because the woman was compassionate. Gemara says, Ella, the very end, Gemara, meaning it is an accepted teaching from generation to generation that Shlomo had help.
Oh.
Okay. They had a tradition that Shlomo had help, divine help. Last passage, Vayishmu'u kol Yisrael, Yishpat, Esher Shafar HaMelech, Chavcheh. So all Israel heard the judgment that the king judged. And they were afraid of him. Why? They saw he was no dummy. Meaning, until then, up to that point, it was quite clear that people thought, yeah, wait, the king's going, wait, don't, you know, we can cheat, we can swindle, we can do whatever we want to do. Why? Who's going to stop us? There's a 14-year-old in charge.
The kid.
Right, the kids are running the asylum. What's going on here? All of a sudden, Shlomo, one story, one event, one thing, and Shlomo said, don't mess with me.
Cool.
And that really set it on track. And that's what he needed. He needed that wisdom.
Wow.
You know? That's what leadership is. It's that one decisive moment where you say, we're going to do it now. And then people follow you for the rest of your life.
Well, it proved that he had seichel.
He had seichel, he had chachma, he had wisdom. And that's what they say, it's chachma, Shlomo. Okay, we'll continue next week.